California has continuously been seeing hotter, faster wildfires. But why? Well, a big contributing factor is our relationship with the land. Today, independent producer Matt Fidler takes us to Butte Creek Canyon, one of the communities devastated by the campfire, where he explores how land practices of the past played a role in what happened there in November.
In the campfire, it really didn't make that much difference. Lots of people had good defensible space in Paradise, and still 90% of the homes burned. The defensible space is going to help you on those 95% of the days that the conditions aren't extreme. But when we get these big winds, defensible space isn't enough.
That's Zeke Lundar. He's a fire geographer and part of the Fire Adapted Communities Learning Network here in Butte County. I met with him while he was unplugging culverts under Honey Run Road up Butte Creek Canyon after a recent rainstorm.
So all of this sediment we see, which is like, you know,
it's like
2 or 3 feet deep, that all came down last night.
2 or 3 feet of sediment came down in one night, basically, or two nights of rain?
Yeah.
Wow.
It rained really hard last night up here.
And this was my concern. The fire charred much of the soil, killing the organic material that normally absorbs the runoff water, making it much more susceptible to erosion. Now, these huge rains are coming in, washing out the loose soil, forever altering the canyon. But then Zeke pointed out to me that this isn't a new phenomenon.
One thing interesting about Butte Creek Canyon is there's been a ton of kind of man-made alteration of this landscape in the last 150 years.
And those past alterations can be connected to the wildfire behavior of the campfire. The most significant of those alterations started during an era that you are probably familiar with, especially if you went to elementary school here in California, the Gold Rush. Because we had gold in them there hills.
Well, the miners discovered this quite early on and came up here probably in 1849 and on through the 50s. And there were communities of 1,000 people in various locations in the canyon here. I'm Alan Hawthorne, executive director of Friends of Butte Creek.
Alan met me up by the remains of the old cover bridge on Honey Run Road. Along with him, Butte Creek Canyon historian John Westland.
I've lived on the old canyon here for 60 years, and I'll be talking a little bit about some of the gold activities in the canyon.
Together, we drove from the old covered bridge up Centerville Road, where a lot of gold mining activities took place. But John wanted me to know that it took a few decades of mining before the damage was significant.
First miners came in, they used a gold pan. But that only lasted a short while, and then they were using a rocker. A rocker is like a child's rocker, only it's set up for gold mining and has holes where the gravel goes through. It separates the big from the little. But the rockers faded rather quickly, and then they were doing sluice boxes, and they did that fairly early on. And then in just a year or two, they were doing what they called long toms, where a whole bunch of men would be on a gravel bar, all shoveling into a big long tom, which was basically a sluice, only it was a lot longer. And then, of course, it kept growing quickly from one stage to the next stage. And in not too many years, they were doing hydraulic mining.
As the easy gold kind of panned out, so to speak, in the creek, the miners started looking at what are called point bars, where there are huge mounds of gravel that have accumulated over thousands of years, and they realized there's gold down underneath there, so we got to get to it.
And this is when the real damage-causing alterations of the canyon started to happen.
The easiest way to get the gold out of those point bars was to develop flumes and divert water upstream, bring it down along the hillsides on a slow gradient, and then when they got to the point bar that they wanted to mine, they would divert it down and put it through a hydraulic monitor and blast all the sediment away and down into the rock, and downstream they'd have their sluice boxes set up.
Ultimately, this was doing two things. They were eliminating healthy topsoil and taking a lot of water out of the watershed. And this was happening all over the canyon, including the area around the town of Centerville.
There is one of those hillsides that's, 100 feet straight up and down that was mined down to nothing. Famous gentleman, John Hupp, was in charge of that. And one of his favorite things to do was to blast the dirt out from underneath a big boulder and watch it roll down the hillside. It was like a community event when he did things like that.
He was saying, I don't give a damn if I get any gold. It's worth it just to see the big boulders roll.
Of course, John Hupp acquired quite a bit of gold while having his fun. But the damage to the canyon was severe.
Soil was disappearing. Trees would be cut down so they could, you know, hydraulically mine through various gravel bars and what have you. And essentially, the soil was gone. I mean, it went down into the valley and ended up in the delta.
This kind of mining wasn't done for very long. The destruction it caused was so obvious that the state of California, which greatly benefited from the taxes all the gold brought in, banned the practice in 1884. But the state was more concerned with the waterways than the soil, so they didn't object when the big dredgers came in the 20th century, as long as they weren't in the actual creek.
They would stay up on the banks, in the tailings that the hydraulic mining had left, dig a big pit, turn everything over, run it through their big sluice box on the dredger, and out the backside.
These dredgers were literally giant ships on man-made ponds next to the creek. And you can still see many of those holes between Centerville Road and Butte Creek today.
And essentially, what those big dredgers did was to completely turn the whole soil profile upside down. Instead of the rocks being down at the bottom and the silt and sand and the gravel up on top, those were all buried. Cobbles are all sitting up on top.
And many of those mounds of inverted soil are also visible today.
So these impacts are enormous. They change the fundamental nature of what's going on.
John Liu has been observing ecosystem restoration for 25 years and has made films documenting such efforts around the world.
And I'm a visiting fellow at the Netherlands Institute of Ecology. I study function and dysfunction in terrestrial ecosystems on a planetary scale.
He wanted me to understand what happens when ground cover and tree canopy is removed and soil exposed.
Then the solar radiation hits, the temperatures are raised, and it begins to dry everything out. So you're essentially dehydrating a once functional biome.
And over time, this can have significant effect on the local climate, giving you more hot, dry days per year.
When you dehydrate biomes, you have a lighter air. So the density of the air is different. And when you have extreme temperature differentials, because over here you have a canopy and over here you have something which is exposed, well, that is what creates wind. And then if the density of the air is different now because it's not carrying as much moisture, then you get this like very serious wind, or you get vortex activity.
Like what we saw with the Camp Fire and other recent destructive fires like the Car Fire in Redding that was so difficult to control. Flaming vortexes or fire tornadoes and high winds make it nearly impossible to contain a fire. But fortunately, there are people doing something about this ecosystem dysfunction right here in Butte County.
My name is Matthew Trum, and I run Treetop Permaculture.
Matthew has co-founded a project called Rebuilding Paradise and wants the entire community involved, rebuilding our communities in a way that can help restore the functionality of our ecosystems. And while it takes a lot of work by a lot of people to do this, he says it's actually quite simple if you think about how ecosystems work. He says all you have to do on the land you're restoring, and you're not hearing me wrong on this, is leave it to beaver.
Leave it and beaver is my term of saying it. So they're called leaves because you're supposed to leave them. We need to cover those soils so that way that the water in them doesn't evaporate, the soil life doesn't die. And that's the very first step. And the second one is think like a beaver. You know, sink, soak, and spread water on the landscape. We should see, if we see heavy water flows in areas that can be avoided by manipulating the earth, moving earth around like a beaver does to slow and moderate that water flow, you know, we will then have more water in our ground. So it's a combination of those two together. We must slow water down, and we also have to have organic materials full of life to absorb it. Those are the two most critical things we can do as humans.
And when ecosystems are functional, they help calm down the extreme conditions causing many of the natural disasters being experienced around the world today, including catastrophic wildfires.
Ecosystems moderate climactic energy. They absorb it. They moderate it. So if you're standing on an ocean and it's a really windy day and there's a forest next to it, you simply walk into the forest and you notice the wind stop. That's because the trees have basically eaten that wind. They use it to build their cambium layer and then get stronger. So every ecosystem absorbs the energies of the climate. So the more ecosystems we remove, the more crazy and chaotic the climate becomes. And it's really as simple as that. We can actually have a lot of these similar human systems that we might say are polluters even, or greenhouse emissions, if we offset that with these ecosystems. Not saying that that's what we need to do, but I'm saying that it's more important that we have the ecosystems first, because it can absorb a lot of that crazy stuff that we do.
To learn more about Matthew Trum's efforts to restore ecosystems on the ridge and to see the demonstration sites that are already working in the county, visit rebuildingparadise.com. In Chico, I'm Matt Fidler.